Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, and everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb to help the economy. We live in an upside-down, topsy-turvy kind of world. And I was talking to somebody yesterday about the truth movement, and he asked me what I thought about a couple of figures in it. And he didn't like what I told him, and it's just I tried to explain when you come out of the normal slave job type existence, and I don't want to disparage anybody who's got a slave job. There is noble forms of slavery out there. You think that because you're getting out of the system of lies, deceit, deception, scumbaggery, sociopathy, psychopathy, all forms of scumbaggery, that you'll come into this movement and it doesn't exist anymore. It's not the case. There's far less of it, sure, but it still exists. And it's a very disillusioning thing. And I think what happens is people have that realization that, oh, my God, the truth movement's not actually all together. It's not actually all campfires and kumbaya. There's actually a whole lot of crap going on behind the scenes here. And all these people that I thought were my heroes and who would never put a foot wrong and all of that kind of stuff turn out to be freaking psychopathic, megalomaniac pieces of trash. Oh, my goodness. And then as a result, they go, you know, frack this truth movement. I'm not going to do anything to help humanity. Throwing the baby out with the bathwater, man. It's not cool. It's not cool. Just find the good people, okay? And good people will be easily identified. They're usually very nice and very friendly and giving of their time and their resources to others. And they don't partake in revenge and whatever. But, you know, I just wanted to kind of make that clear to people because the day might come where I turn into some form of douchebag, and I would wish very much that my listeners would expose me and get me the frack out of any position of public influence that I might have obtained at such a point so that I don't continue to do damage to other people's lives and the movement itself. Okay? I'll keep questioning whether or not I'm becoming said douchebag, but if I ever actually do, and it slips my knowledge, I need you to expose me. I do. I really do. Now, my very special guest for the, we need to come up with some sort of a name for these sort of news segments or something, don't we, Suzanne? Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com.
Hello, everyone.
What have you got for us today? Anything hot on the presses?
Yeah, the Navy, the U.S. Navy says, oh, God, climate change is causing a national security threat because of rising sea levels. We can't float our boats. So you got to stop driving your cars and expelling that CO2. Don't breathe. One professor suggested that everybody skip every third breath. Maybe that'll help.
Why don't you just kill every third person, Professor? Maybe that'll help.
Yeah. Don't forget that our plants need CO2 to live. So if we get rid of all the CO2, we're not going to have any plant life. And yeah, subsequently, any other life.
Well, what's a bigger threat to the global cycle? Carbon, which is one of the four building blocks of life, which we are carbon-based molecules and the plants need to breathe, or nano-aluminium-coated fiberglass being sprayed out of freaking chemtrail planes all day long. You know?
I think the U.S. Navy is a bigger threat to the globe than carbon.
Yeah. Think about it. You know, you have on the one side this little infinitesimal molecule that you can't see, and on the other side, you have a destroyer shooting a Tomahawk cruise missile at you. Which is the biggest threat?
Right. Exactly.
I think the Tomahawk cruise missile. I could be wrong. With you. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I haven't been schooled in chemistry enough.
Well, that's their claim. I have another article that I put out yesterday that went viral, and for good reason. In Colorado, the sheriffs are being threatened to have their pay slashed or refused if they continue to uphold the Second Amendment and do not start supporting the federal gun grab.
Go on.
Oh, that's really big. I mean, they're telling the sheriffs, who are elected officials, that they're not going to pay them. The city is not going to pay them. The county is not going to allow their salaries to go through. And this is all because a lot of constitutional sheriffs, as of last year and into this year, have been standing up and writing letters to Obama and Vice President Biden, and also to that lovely Senator Dianne Feinstein, who has the assault weapons ban of 2013, who, by the way, recently said that all veterans possibly are mentally defective, so none of them should have guns, even though it was okay that they shoot a gun when they were in service, but as they come out, they no longer should have the right to shoot that gun. So these constitutional sheriffs are getting now threatened in Colorado to not get paid for their services that they're rendering, and they're protecting the Second Amendment rights and upholding the Constitution, not only in the state level, but on the U.S. Constitution's rights to bear arms, and they're being demonized even further.
Now, exactly what is going on here in terms of Dianne Feinstein? I mean, what are her qualifications? Because I've heard a lot about this woman, but I've heard a lot about her, but I don't know anything about her. You know what I'm saying? Apart from the fact that she's a gun grabber and has a concealed carry and many armed guards while telling everybody else to not have any guns.
Well, she's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. She is.
There's a big red commie flag right there.
Yeah, exactly. She also was the champion of the 1994 assault weapons ban that was only good for 10 years after the Columbine shooting with former President Bill Clinton. And so she's back saying, oh, and she also said last week that it's legal to hunt humans. I didn't know that. I don't understand how they get elected. I don't understand. I guess what confuses me is how strong all of these chemicals that we're ingesting and all of this propaganda is that we're ingesting that causes us to elect these people into a seat where they have the power to enact these crazy laws and make these incredible statements, and yet we still vote them in. That is baffling to me. I'm confused.
You know, it's like we're creating Dr. Feinstein's monster. You know, it's alive! It's alive! Oh.
But it's not allowed to have a gun. And meanwhile...
Only a torch and a pitchfork.
Right. Well, meanwhile, DHS just spent $4.5 million on gun parts. So they're not only buying up the ammo, they're not only buying up riot gear and armored vehicles that can withstand an improvised explosive device blast, but now they're buying up $4.5 million worth of parts on guns that would be, you know, easily replaceable because they would break easily. And so they're gearing up. They're even buying, like, extra parts in case their guns break down. They can just fix them right on spot and keep shooting you.
So, you know, when a soldier gets shot, he yells, "Medic!" And when a gun blows up, he yells, "Mechanic!" And he comes in and repairs his gun so he can shoot people. And then they say, "Medic!" again.
And the other thing that's crazy is all of this money is coming from the taxpayers. We're paying for our own tyrannical takeover.
Hey, well, you can't tyrannically take people over without getting them to pay for it. I mean, how else would you afford it? And more to the point, how would you get people to go along with it unless they were paying for it? Have you ever had a conversation with somebody about tax or anything like that? And they say, "I'm paying my taxes," and la 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 la, and they're really proud of it. And they say that after you've had a conversation where they agree with you about a huge amount of crazy government expenditure, which is enslaving them, taking away their rights, and increasing their taxes, and under-delivering on their promises. And yet they're still proud to pay it. They still want to even pay more for the good of everybody, even though they already know that it ain't doing anybody any good.
Yes, I'm confused by all of this. I know that we have a lot of chemicals in the food and water and in the air and all the crap that we watch on television that reworks our minds. It's baffling to me how this system works. I just don't understand how anyone... We're not capable anymore of having an independent thought. And along those lines, I put out an article today about... Al Gore has this website, it's called Reality Drops, where he's encouraging all of the eco-fascists and all of the alarmists who believe that, you know, man is causing all this climate change and we have to, you know, stop CO2 and stop breathing.
Oh, because if anybody knows about reality, it's Mr. Hockey Stick Graph that goes backwards in time.
Yes, yes. Well, Michael Mann came out as well. You know, he's hiding behind Penn State. But he comes out publicly every once in a while. And so with this Reality Drops, Gore is mobilizing a internet Stasi network of trolls to go out there, and he actually teaches them how to troll people who are climate change deniers, like you and I. When I post an article exposing climate change as a hoax, then these Stasi would come in and these trolls would come in, and they've already been trained. So they know what to say to sway the public, whoever reads in the comment threads.
Mm. Now, there is also a phenomenon that I've noticed a lot about Truth Movement channels in particular, is that they have disabled comment sections. I'm not sure how I feel about that at the moment, because on the one hand, we're talking about huge quantities of paid, trained troll scum who come in there, muddy the waters, basically make whatever video you're putting up for naught, but for anybody who reaches the comments. So there's that. You can just block all comments altogether. Whereas I like to allow everybody to comment and, you know, have all those perspectives and everything. However, if somebody's obviously a troll, I won't delete their comments. I'll just block that particular person because I don't like having... scumbags insulting me and things of that nature. And usually if you block them, you never hear from that person again.
Unless they get creative and set up a fake account. and just keep flaming back at you. I've had that before.
Yeah. Well, you know, they only will create new things for a short period of time anyway before they lose interest. Kind of like, you know, feeding the beast. You're familiar with the term, right? And
yes.
A troll in mythology is a kind of beast. Don't feed it.
Yes, it's like that little sign, you know, don't feed the bears, don't feed the wild animals. They're dependent on opposition. And they thrive on it. They probably breed it at home. They probably breed it at their job with their friends and family, if they have any friends left. They feed off of this. It's an emotional dependency. If they're not in opposition of something, they go nuts. It's like they can't function.
Yeah. Like Mary Mary, quite contrary. Suzanne Posel is my guest from OccupyCorporatism.com and RealGorillaMedia.com. We'll be right back. After the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, and we have very special guests from all over the world of varying descriptions, subject matters, and maybe even levels of intelligence agency involvement. My very special guest today is Anne Bressington, I believe, coming at us from the most wonderful cacophony of both sunshine and torrential rain that I have ever seen. It's the island continent of Australia. And welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Welcome to you and your listeners.
I am so, so excited to have you on the show. I must say, I'm getting like mini palpitations.
Settle down, take a breath.
Yeah, maybe. I think everybody just figured out I'm a mouth breather, knuckle dragger there. Okay, anyway, Anne, we have some standard journalism questions for you, the who, what, when, where, why, and how. So,
right.
Let's start with the who, just to explain a little bit about who you are.
I am an independent member of the Legislative Council, or the Upper House, in South Australia. I was elected into Parliament in 2006, and there you go, that's it. Legislative Council is the House of Review for legislation. We decide whether legislation goes through or whether it doesn't. And, I've been on a huge learning curve since 2006.
Okay. Would the American equivalent be like a senator or something?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, even the Australian equivalent for our federal government would be a senator.
Okay, and what is it you're actually doing right now? And the reason why we're having it on your show is regarding Agenda 21. What tipped you off about all that?
Look, in about 2008, I came across a few documents when I was researching a piece of legislation that we were doing, and Agenda 21 was mentioned, and, you know, you follow the thread, and I started reading about it, and I thought, no, that can't be right. You know, no way would an Australian government set Australia and Australians up for something like this. So I did dismiss it. But then I started to see a pattern of legislation coming through, and the tenor of legislation interfering with people's rights and about land, property ownership. And I thought, oh, so I went back and studied it a bit more. And I thought, well, you know what? We are in the throngs of this, and we are on the verge of rolling this out at lightning speed. And I mentioned it in Parliament and got dismissed as a conspiracy theorist, as I do when I talk about fluoride or chemtrails or any of those things that every ordinary citizen, you know, knows something about. And then I decided when Lord Monckton was over here that it was actually time to start telling people out there about what we were doing and how far down the line we'd come with Agenda 21.
And in terms of when, do you think this entire policy will be enacted? Do they have a game plan, you know, all Agenda 21 policy will be implemented by 2025 or something?
Well, they do. I don't believe that it's that far away. It's in 2025. We are seeing now legislation where farmers are being literally driven off their land through what we call Natural Resource Management Act. We have natural resource management officers in Australia who have more power than the police. They can come onto your property without a warrant. They can demand your financial records. They can tell you what you can and can't do on your land, how many head of stock you can have on your land. We also have the Water Management Act that is restricting farmers' access to water because we're being told that it's such a finite resource, which is also causing our food bowl to shrink. Dairy farmers have been hit the hardest at the moment. We had, in one particular area, we had 4 years ago 1,700 dairy farms in South Australia. Now we have 98, and some of those are on the verge of closing down. We're also seeing an attack on property rights, as in the government changing what you can and can't do with your land under the heritage status legislation. So we're seeing it coming in, attacking from all sides, really. And this is of concern to me because this is the main part of Agenda 21, is to do away with rural communities altogether, herd people into the cities to live, and return most of the areas out there that would be farming or you know, cattle stations, return that back to native vegetation and probably no-go zones for human beings.
And where did Agenda 21 actually come from? Where did it originate?
Well, it's interesting because we tracked it, or I tracked it back to Club of Rome in 1968, I think it was. A group of people got together and decided that we needed a common cause to unite humanity, which would, of course, be environmentalism. Turn that into basically one world religion, and everything is about saving the planet, and human beings are seen as a scourge to the planet. The way we consume, what we eat, appliances that we use in our home is all contributing to the destruction of this planet. And they decided that if they come up with a common cause, which was, or few actually, famine, climate change, water shortages, all of those sorts of things, that would be enough to get people to unite and agree to this ridiculous agenda. And then, of course, it was finalised at the Rio conference in 1998. Government signed off on that. And then we started to roll it out from back then. And the interesting part of this is that no government has actually come out, and well, no government in Australia has actually come out and said, okay, this is Agenda 21, this is what we're going to do, this is why we're going to do it, and this is going to be the end game for you guys. You're not going to be able to own your own land or manage your own land. Your movements are going to be restricted. You know, your food bowl is going to be reduced because apparently, you know, cows produce methane and therefore we must reduce stock numbers. We will be a net food importer within a short period of time. But you know what? It's all for the benefit of the planet. So this is what we're going to do over the next 10, 15, 20 years. Get used to it. No government has had the guts to come out and lay it out on the table for the people to justify the measures that they're taking. And I think that's the part that annoys me the most, because this sort of stuff affects every man, woman and child on this planet. And Australia's not the only one rolling this out, as you well know. And if governments can't come out and be honest with the people about what they're doing and why they're doing it, then that tells me that there's a dirty little secret in there somewhere.
If somebody keeps information from you, it's usually for their benefit.
Absolutely.
And lastly, how exactly do you think that this can be resisted? Is it a public awareness thing? Because you've simply laid out that almost every single policy that's being passed through Parliament right now is being done for false pretenses.
Yes, that's exactly right. And how do we fix this? Well, you know, we are operating now under corporate law rather than by our constitution, because by our constitution these laws would be invalid. And I'm encouraging people to start at local council level, which is where these policies are actually being rolled out. Government can legislate on the big mainframe stuff like natural resource management, water plans, development and planning legislation. But local government is being given the money and the resources to roll this out slowly. And I'm asking people to challenge, first of all, the validity of local government, because it is only there by the will of the Parliament. It has no statutory authority at all. And when people start to challenge local government, then they can get some answers about what authority local government actually has to enact all of this legislation. And they have none. So we're asking people, first of all, to put a private property sign on your front gate, because by law now, if anybody enters your property and that gate is closed and you have that sign on the gate, then there's already been high court challenges in Australia to show that people are trespassing, and that you don't actually have to give permission for these natural resource management people to come onto your property for any other reason other than to talk. I'm in the process at the moment of having the Natural Resource Management Act repealed. I'm hoping that I'll get the numbers to do that, and that'll be a very interesting public debate. But until then, there are some precautions that people can take, as in putting that sign on your front gate, keeping your front gate closed, and not allowing access to people unless they give you reasonable notice, and unless they lay out in writing exactly why they want to come onto your property. So we had a case of a disabled couple on the border of, I think it was Victoria and Canberra, and they were both, you know, quite elderly and disabled, and they had a small property, and these equivalent of natural resource office management officers came onto their property, declared all of their belongings to be illegal rubbish, bought a skip, loaded it all into the skip, and then locked them out of their house and off their property, claiming that they were environmental vandals. So that's how far this will roll out. That's people would think that's an extreme case. But what's happening is they're starting on the outskirts, you know, and picking on the most vulnerable, and harassing them and intimidating them, depriving them of their rights, and, of course, it'll roll out from there.
And are people able to lawfully protect their private property using force if such an instance happens?
Well, as I said earlier, these natural resource management officers have more power than the police. So the police need a warrant to come and search your home. Natural resource management officers do not. They need reasonable suspicion to come onto your property. These natural resource management officers do not need that. Police cannot access your financial records unless, of course, they believe that you're involved in criminal activity and that you've got unexplained wealth from the proceeds of crime. So police have all these limitations on them. Natural resource management officers have none of those limitations. So what we're saying now is go back to your common law rights of your property and restrict access to your property in a peaceful way. Write a letter. And this is what people aren't doing, is putting things in writing. They are relying on telephone calls and telephone conversations. And let me tell you, that's a trend, that's a dangerous trend that we've started, where we are fearful or too lazy or whatever to put anything in writing and keep a paper trail. Because I believe that in a court of law, if any of these people try to breach your common law rights, that the courts would find in your favour. And we've actually had a few people who have taken on this challenge and have won. So, you know, it's a muck around, it's a lot of hassle, but at the end of the day, it's up to every individual to protect their rights and to ensure that common law is used to our benefit. That's the only, really the only tool that we have got to set right injustices. And if we don't start to get familiar with that and we don't start to utilise what is still there, although that is being, you know, etched away as we speak, then these people will come in and they will ride roughshod over you and your life. And we've got to take a stand. We've got to stop it.
Do you, are you concerned that certain people might violently defend their property against these agents of the government and start off like some kind of an insurrection?
I am, and I've heard plenty of talk of it. And my advice to people is that's exactly what they want. So there is a peaceful way to do this. There is a reasonable way to do this. And at the moment, there is still mechanisms in law that allow you to do this properly. And I would suggest that, you know, as I said, first of all, a letter in writing to your local council. Why do you want access to my property?
And unfortunately, we're coming to break now. And also, my advice would be record absolutely every single conversation you have with these people so you can prove it. We'll be right back.
Nicotine, alcohol, good drugs. Coincidentally, tax drugs. Ooh, how does this work? Thank God they're taxing alcohol, man. It means we got those good roads we can drive on. Because I'll tell you something, I'll be honest, man. If I were going to legalize a drug, it sure wouldn't have been alcohol. Sorry, there's better drugs and better drugs for you. That's a fact. Pot is a better drug than alcohol. Fact. Fact. Stop your internal dialogue. But Bill, alcohol's a... Shut up! You're wrong. Get over it. I'll prove it to you, man. You're at a ball game or a concert and someone's really violent and aggressive and obnoxious. Are they drunk?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Having some problems with the advertisements and things of that nature and hearing Bill Hicks over and over again. It's not... There are worse things to listen to over and over again, I think. My very special guest, which is still on the line, is the wonderful, the fabulous, and the I don't know how many other adjectives that are very nice that I can squeeze into this 12-minute segment. But I'd try if there was any point to it. She's great, and she's a nice lady. And you know something about women that I've learned as a radio show host and. Is that there are a lot of very, very talented, intelligent, and protective women out there who are actually really fighting for people's rights and survival instead of what's normally dominant is the men going out there and being really angry and aggressive and going out and attacking the enemy. Whereas I found I've gained new respect for women in this case that they're really out there to protect the innocent and the weak rather than attacking the evil and corrupt. And I think it's a symbiotic relationship that's really required in order to defeat these frickin' scumbags.
I couldn't have described them any better myself. I think you're right. I think women are starting to step up now, and I really do think it's that mothering side of us. I'm worried for my children and my grandchildren of where this country is going. And that's been my motivation, is to make sure that my children and grandchildren grow up in a country the same as I did, where we did have freedoms, we did have rights, we did have governments way back when that served the people and didn't serve corporations. And I think there are a lot of women who are out there now who are starting to wake up and think, well, if I don't do something in various areas, if I don't do something, then, you know, we're going to go to shit. And if once a
We've unfortunately got those pesky FCC American regulations here, so we can't say those words.
Oh, okay. Sorry. well, we're going to go to crap then. And if we don't do something now, then it's going to be too late. And once we get to the edge of that cliff, then it's a long, long haul back. And it's going to mean a lot of hardship and a lot of trial for a lot of people. And we've seen what's happened in the United States with the foreclosure on mortgages and whatever through what I believe was a contrived global financial crisis. And we can't allow that to happen. And we can't allow it to go the next step, which is government controlling absolutely every aspect of our lives.
Now, I had been made aware, I'm not 100% sure, maybe you can corroborate this for me, that there is a bill before the House in Australia that will give and grant local councils the ability to make, draft and pass their own legislation.
Yes, well, we're having a Senate committee inquiry at the moment. Now, be aware this is on a federal government level, not a state government level. But the federal government is trying desperately to get local government recognised in the Constitution. And that's what it's going to take for them to be able to pass their own legislation. Now, if that happens, the plan is to dismantle state governments and we will have local government taking the place of state government. And then we will only have the federal government, which we all know. Our federal government here is beholden to the UN and the treaties that we've signed over decades that basically the UN is calling in its chips now and saying, OK, you've signed these treaties, now it's time to give us what you promised. And Agenda 21, of course, is at the forefront of that. So I've been urging people to write to the Senate committee, just a letter, my will be done, that we've already had two referendums on this. And they failed because people know, or people used to know, what this would mean. So if people don't actually write to the Senate committee and take an action step, then I believe that, you know, the submissions that this committee receives will all be in favour of local government being recognised, and it may just be used, the results of this committee may just be used to support that piece of legislation and divert away from a referendum, which is, by our constitution, is the only way that this could possibly happen. But we've seen our government undermine our constitution now on so many levels that it's just not funny. This will be the final straw. I believe that will be game over if local government is recognised in our constitution and is given those powers. That will be game over for Australia.
That's Agenda 21 protocol, isn't it, to give the local authorities more power? I'm theorising here that all centrally located tyrannies throughout history have been really inefficient and incapable of controlling and enslaving people indefinitely, whereas what the lesson of history has told us that locally run communities with local issues and local representatives and things of that nature are far better at regulating and helping other communities. But if you flip that around, imagine if you had one global system that allows for all of those independent little local councils and everything, but they're all implementing the same agenda from a central level while operating at a local government level, you would, for the first time, I think, maybe theoretically, have a world government that is capable of literally controlling every minute aspect of everybody's lives forever.
Absolutely.
That's my great fear.
Absolutely, you're right. And, of course, you know, we have, in South Australia, we have numerous local councils. I think we've got about 90 just in South Australia alone. And they have a very small area to look after. And to implement these policies, it would be very, very easy for them because they're big bureaucracies already. And it frightens the hell out of me that there are some people out there who have bought the lamestream media line of, you know, we're over-governed, we need fewer politicians, and this is the way to do it. Get rid of state government and we'll just have local government. They're more answerable to us. You know, it'll be a closer, more intimate relationship with local government than what you have with your state politicians. Well, people need to understand that doing that removes all of the safeguards. That at the moment, legislation needs to go through two houses of parliament and get passed. And we've got a very functional legislative council in South Australia at the moment. We have seven Labor members, we have seven Liberal members, and we have seven minor parties and crossbenchers, independents. So there is never a majority of one party or the other holding the legislative council, holding the balance of power. So they all need to negotiate, really, with crossbenchers and independents. And that makes for good law. It makes for us to be able to amend legislation, and especially now that I'm aware of Agenda 21, I'm actually able to put up amendments that can hold it off for a while, if you like, and basically get the government to put their intentions on the record. And they're quite reticent to do that, of course. So at least we have, until 2014, when our state election occurs, at least we have some power left in the Legislative Council to be able to protect property rights and land rights and your own personal space, your own personal area. So if local government is going to be responsible for that, then they can roll out at lightning speed all of these environmental policies. Property rights.
What I think might happen there is that the Australian federal government will then dictate to the local councils directly and, in essence, out of having a more intimate relationship with your politicians, actually, they get even further away from you and dictate to you from even further afield.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Well, state government at the moment, we're seeing a lot of legislation dribbling down from federal government. You know, we're calling it harmonisation of laws.
That's very Orwellian.
Oh, it is. It is. And I tell everybody, go back now and read two books, 1984 and Brave New World, because we're living both of them.
Hold on. See, we're coming to a break here now. We've got you on for one more hour, as I've got down on the schedule here. And I thank you so much for your time. And I've got this real concern for my Aussie brethren that we'll be sitting around, and one day, you know, you'll have your barbecues and your Darwin stubbies confiscated by some Nazi in a green uniform or something like that, and everything that made Australia awesome and free and fun will be gone forever. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go freaking nuts. Especially with copious quantities of scumbaggery and BS all around you. Learn to laugh at the things that terrify you. That's what I've learned if you want to remain sane. And because you ever noticed that the people who are the most crazy, you know, who are the most angry, very rarely smile and laugh and have fun. And it's very important to keep that train going. Speaking of which, We have been donated a significant amount of cash, which has just been spent on my girlfriend Sarah's new van so she can do her gardening job and everything like that. And that's due mostly to two people, Heather and James, who gave a significant amount to the Sarah's new car fund. So now she can go to work and stuff like that, and we can continue living our happy lives. And I'll continue, of course, doing this radio show and exposing scumbaggery the best way I know how. And I just wanted to say just how fracking grateful I am every single time that I'm down in the dumps and totally screwed and have no idea how I'm even going to continue or survive until next week. Somebody who listens to this show turns up and gives me something, whether that be the energy, the encouragement, or the financial resources to keep doing this. That's why I interview pretty much everybody who my listeners suggest, because really this is a show for all of you guys. Okay, I barely make any decisions. I'm just the I'm the man behind the curtain, just propping all the gears and levers. You guys are the Wizard of Oz, and thank you very much. You're just magic. Another guest that was suggested to me is my current one, Anne Bressington from Australia. Anne, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
And what were we talking about just before we got rudely cut off by the ad before? I forget.
Well, we were talking about the government over here trying to get through the recognition of local council in our constitution, which would mean then that state governments would be done away with, and we would have just local government and the federal government to roll out UN agendas, and especially Agenda 21, and enforce the treaties that we've signed over the last decades. And it's a very scary scenario, and people in Australia need to actually get up off their butt now and do something, because politicians need to be nudged in the right direction of what the people want. And if they ignore it, then they ignore it at their peril.
Now, I do think that this is the real thing that's the problem. I go around, I see so many people in New Zealand, and you talk about this stuff with them, and they go, don't worry, mate, she'll be right. Just have another Monteith's or another Lion Red or something of that nature. And I'm sure in Australia it's, don't worry, mate, I'm sure the government's fair dinkum, just have another Foster's. It's the same thing. We've just got this cultural gap of people who want to drug themselves out of giving a frack about reality.
Yep, you're right. And, you know, I'm a great follower of Rage Against the Machine. And one of their songs says exactly that, you know, forget about the movement, go out, have a good time, and just party, and don't worry about it. And we've got to get out of that frame of mind, because I believe that right now we are, as I put it, a bee's dick away from total control of government. And if we don't stand up and we don't stand our ground now in a peaceful and lawful manner, then I had a conversation with Barnaby Joyce. I don't know whether you've heard of him over there. He's a federal government senator for the National Party.
No.
And I was at a dinner one evening and I said to him, you know, about all this foreign investment, what's going on with the selling off of Australia, this Agenda 21. And he said to me, Anne, he said, the problem is that China, who is, you know, the main country, it's a sovereign country buying up our sovereign land. And he said, the problem is that the Chinese have bigger guns than we've got, and they've got more guns than we've got. And if we try and kick their butt, then they will kick our butt three times harder. He said, and we're not that far away from one day waking up to a knock on the door and being told, you know, I longer own this property. You know, get out, work in the fields and make food for us. He said, that's how serious this is. So we need to understand here, this isn't just a game. This isn't just a conspiracy theory. This is a real threat to our freedom and to our sovereignty. And if we don't start acting now, then by the time we realise that this has all happened, it will be too late.
Yeah, no, and you know, it's really difficult to get people motivated on this particular issue. I believe the problem is that people are employed. Like, employment is actually one of the greatest ways you can use to distract and exhaust people so that they will not have the energy to do any research or take any action of any kind. And I've seen this through protests over the years, Anne, is that most of the people that come out who are doing a huge quantity of the research and go into the protests are really intelligent people, are actually unemployed.
Yes. Well, we have that aspect of it where it's not just a 9-to-5 job anymore. You know, I think it's Australia, we work the longest hours of any country in the world. We have a casual employment base. So most people do not have just that full-time job. So they're on shift work and they're scraping for hours at work to be able to make ends meet. Some people have maybe 2 or 3 different jobs, especially in the hospitality industry. But we also have a government that is expert at divide and conquer. So for every government system that exists, we have WorkCover for injured workers, we have child protection, we have Office of the Public Trustee, and the list goes on and on, of statutory authorities that we have. Every single one of those statutory authorities is legislated in a manner to make people fight for what is rightfully theirs. So WorkCover, I was just dealing with a gentleman last week who has spent the last 6 years representing himself in the WorkCover tribunal. He won, and then WorkCover, the corporation, appealed against the judgment and had the judge removed from the case that found in his favour. So now it looks like he's got another 6 years of time in court preparing for his case. The same with child protection. I'm sure you have the same problem over there with child protection issues. Children that shouldn't be removed are. Children that should be removed are not. And it is just a battlefield. So we have so many people now caught up in their own personal battles for what would never have happened 20 years ago. Plus, you know, they're working long hours. They're working more than one job. It's all a distraction. It's all a distraction to take away from what the big game, end game is. And I keep saying to people, we've got to come together. All of these issues have a blueprint. There is a way this is rolled out on individual cases and individual issues. And what we're doing is we're putting out all the little brush fires and we're not seeing this raging bushfire that's heading towards us. And that's exactly what they want. It's diversion. And you're right, people are too busy for one reason or another to actually sit down and look at this for what it is. But you know what? We've actually got to make the time, because if we think life is tough now, then in a very short period of time, it's going to get a lot tougher.
Well, and I think anybody who's even paying a minute amount of attention in any country or whatever understands now more than ever that for the last couple of years, everything's been getting consistently tougher and tougher and tougher, and there's just no end in sight.
Oh, absolutely. And we've got a situation, I don't know what it's like in New Zealand with these marine parks. In South Australia, most of our fishing industry will be gone when these marine parks are rolled out. And we've got, you know, one organisation with 18,000 members that are trying to fight these marine parks, because it's not just about, as I suppose you know, this has got nothing to do with the environment. This has got to do with setting up pristine areas for the rich and famous to be able to come on holiday. And it's ironic that here in Australia we had just last year a battle about the super trawler Margaris coming into our waters to trawl for our fishing resources, marine resources, invited by the same federal government. that is now rolling out these marine parks and closing down local fishing businesses, fishing industries, because apparently the most well-managed resource in the world, which is Australian fisheries, is under threat. Now, people are being touched by this, and this is Agenda 21. This is also Agenda 21. So, all about the environment, and there was a meeting over at a small island off South Australia, Kangaroo Island, about 6 or 7 months ago, when they were talking about these marine parks. And the fishing industry was represented there, and they said, this is our livelihood that you're taking away. And the minister's response was, well, you just have to move to the mainland and get a real job.
Oh, my God. That is so arrogant.
Well, that's what we've got. We've got arrogant governments who, for whatever reason, believe that they have the force and the power now to roll out these policies, these environmental policies, and there is no need anymore to fear the people. And isn't there that saying that people should not fear their government, government should fear their people? And
well, I think the full quote from Jefferson is, when the people fear the government, there is tyranny, and when the government fears the people, there is freedom.
That's right. Yep. And we've got to turn that around now. And we've got so many people that have lost faith in the political system as it is, you know, the voting, two-party preferred. Nobody really knows what to do. People are running around chasing their tails, thinking up all of these things like, well, we just won't vote. Well, people don't understand that if only 10% of the population vote, that 10% pick government. They elect government. So by not voting, I guarantee you that the environmental zealots, the communists that we have in our country, Marxist regime, whatever you want to call it, they won't forget to vote. So when you do vote, you make your vote count. And know your candidates. You know, take time to suss them out on what they stand for and what their party stands for. And if you don't like it, don't vote for them. Vote independent. You know, vote for the gun club, whatever, the shooters party, for whatever. But, you know, you need to be proactive. I have a saying in my office that for democracy to work, you actually have to work at democracy, because our politicians are like, I describe the mother in me, they're like spoiled children in a candy store. And if the parents, which is us, don't say no, stop, then they will just feast on all the candy that they can get their hands on. And they may throw a tantrum here and there when they don't get their own way. But you know what? That's what it's all about, us exerting our power and not having them exert their power over us.
Well, it seems to me that if you are not going to vote, another quote comes to mind, the only thing that's necessary for evil to get its way, and not in so many words, is for good men to do nothing. And
yes.
I found this very interesting, this of, I'm not going to vote because there's no point in voting and I'll never accomplish anything. Well, mate, by doing nothing, you are vocally,
yes,
physically, and perpetually making evil stronger.
That's right. And that's exactly what they want. They want you to lose faith in the system. They want you to lose faith in the power of your vote. And they want people not to vote. As I said, the zealots and the communists and the Marxists won't forget to vote. And this has been a gradual... And I blame lamestream media a lot for this. You know, this how much politicians get paid... all the lurks and perks, and in some cases, you know, it's true, but there's been this gradual attack on politicians that some have deserved and some haven't. And people don't even bother now to get to know their candidates. As soon as you say you're a politician, people go, oh, really? and they don't believe another word that comes out of your mouth. Now, the media have contributed to that in a great way. Politicians who have done the wrong thing have also earned that reputation. But not everybody in politics is a rotten egg. And if people can't take the time to tell the difference, then, you know what, societies get the governments they deserve. And well, we're on that
apathy,
track.
Apathy is the most dangerous thing, I think, because, well, basically the scumbaggery element within the world government structure need people to not give a frack in order to get away with whatever they're doing. If you don't care, okay, what happens to you or what happens to other people, then sure enough, anything they want to do to you or to other people will get done unless you stand in their way. And I think this is a part of a duty to your country or your people or even just to the small thing. It's a duty to yourself to remain free, okay? I don't know about you, Anne, but I've had jobs before. And I don't have any form of employment now. Thank God, thank goodness for that. I get to, you know, talk radio with cool people like yourself for a change. Where I have hated my boss, but because of the fact that he's my boss, I haven't been able to say anything that about it. And as a result, all of these negative thoughts, emotions, and things of that nature are stuck within me, and I wind up hating myself. And I think that's what's happening to the voting public now.
Well, you're right, and I in Australia, you know, the best job that people could go for now is in mining. You know, that's the job that will provide you with security, with the money that you need to survive. And I liken that to way back when, in the days of slavery, when you either went out in the fields and picked cotton, or you worked in the mines.
You know, it doesn't sound sane at all to me, you know, and that's the reason why I believe that the system is insane. We'll be right back with Anne Bressington from Australia.
Been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting in.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And my very special guest is Anne Bressington from Australia. Now, Anne, I found that another reason why people get detached from trying to protect their current country is because they don't know much of its history. Have you noticed that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have been a great fan of Alex Jones for a long time. And the fact that people in America know their constitution, they know their rights, they're willing to fight for it. Here, we have got no idea how our constitution is supposed to work, when our constitution is being unravelled. And we don't have that history. That knowledge of history. And I think that takes away a lot of the patriotism that we used to have in this country. And people are just sort of drifting around aimlessly without any real knowledge of their roots and appreciation of, you know, people that have given up their lives for the freedom of this country. And especially in our young people, and I'm not denigrating young people at all, but this whole education system and then going on to uni, it's all a programming exercise, I believe, that puts us more worried about ourselves, concentrating more on ourselves than we are on the country as a whole. And we've lost a lot of the good old Aussie spirit over here in the last probably 10 years, 15 years, I suppose, where, you know, that fair dinkum buddy camaraderie seems to have faded away. And
Do you have any anecdotes of a personal nature on that vein that you might share with us?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Do you have any anecdotes of a personal nature and your personal experience that you might share with us based on that vein?
Oh, look, I see this in my work all the time. I meet with constituents, and that whole focusing on themselves and their issue. Like, for example, we've got all of this trouble going on at the moment in Australia with foreign investment, Agenda 21, the issue of the local council being recognised in the constitution. These are big issues, big issues. And we've got a group of people running around worrying about citizen-initiated referendum. They don't understand. We're not operating under our constitution anymore. We are operating under corporate law. And it doesn't matter whether we get a citizen-initiated referendum or not. You know, we might get that reinstated, but we'll never get to actually have one of those referendums because governments have found a way to go around the need for a referendum. So that's one issue. I wish people would concentrate more on the big picture stuff when they're involved in these lobby groups. Concentrate more on the big picture stuff that we're actually facing now and put those side issues, put them aside, and let's all come together and send a very clear message to our governments that we want to be governed by our constitution, not by corporate law. And once we could get that sorted and get our government to admit that they are not a constituted government, they are a corporation. We've got the papers, we know the registration number, and you can't have a government leading people and governing people and acting as a corporation. It just simply does not work.
I mean, it's fair enough for somebody to create a business and then give people the choice about whether or not they want to work for you and be able to negotiate pay and things of that nature. Government as a corporation, on the other hand, forces you to buy their products, forces you to work for them, and forces you to agree via coercion in every single aspect. It's not supposed to govern public life, the corporate law is. It's supposed to govern private enterprise and things of that nature. They've completely missed the mark here.
Well, and you find, as you go through and dig deeper, go down the rabbit hole, that even our courts are corporations. So what we've got here is people in Parliament developing statute law. People go into court. They argue their case based on statute law, but find that the courts are operating under corporate law, which is a completely different code. So the chance of getting a judge that is going to find a judgment in your favour based on law is on statute law, is very few and far between cases, I'm afraid. So we've got two sets of laws that don't work together and don't work in the best interest of the people. And that's why I say to people, go to common law. While it's still there, go to common law and argue your point based on common law. And if you don't start exercising that particular right that you have, then you may as well kiss the life you know goodbye. Because we've got a reign in the courts, we've got a reign in government. And, you know, only the people can do that. Politicians make laws. People need to make sure that those laws work for them.
Now, common law is based on common sense, but the irony being, common sense is no longer common, which is why I've decided to rename it Platinum Sense, because it's the rarest element on Earth.
Well, I tend to agree with you, and especially with the laws that we're making.
I would actually like to see the Australian mining industry try to mine some kind of Platinum Sense for a change.
Well, I think we all know that common sense isn't as common as it used to be. And, you know, I have a saying that the fish rots from the head. This dysfunction comes from dysfunctional government. And we've got governments in Australia that are keeping that dirty secret, that our crest, the emu and the kangaroo, is not actually a crest. It's a trademark. And that every government department that we're dealing with, customs, you know, all of these government departments, Department of Water, Department of Environment, They're all individual corporations behaving under corporate law. And we've got to get back to our common law rights and challenge that corporate law on common law rights. And we've got a group up here called Flag Australia, which is Food Producers and Landowners Action Group. And we're taking donations now to actually build up enough money to be able to take some of these cases where farmers are being driven off their land to the High Court, because we know that once we get to the High Court, the laws that have been made around water, around farm management, all of that sort of thing, are against our constitution. If we can get a ruling in the High Court based on that, then these laws that have been introduced are null and void. So, you know, we've got to start fighting for this in the right way. We've got to start using the legal system that we understand to be, and the High Court is really the only authority that we have to make a judgment on whether laws are constitutional or not. And we've got to start going that extra mile and doing that, because if we don't, then we are bowing down to corporate law, which doesn't work for us as citizens.
Now, if the existing system is broken, usually the best thing to do is to create a new system that makes the existing system obsolete. That's another old saying. And I was just thinking about this. Somebody asked me, and how do I suggest that we get New Zealand back out of control of the corporates and the scumbaggery element within our, that controls our society? And I said, well, you know, anything but violence, right? Basically, that's the bottom line. Avoid violence at all costs, because if you fire the first shot, oh my God. And the other element that I said is it must be done in a lawful, procedural way, like in the court systems. This person did make a point, and I understand what they're saying. They said, what do you mean? Their court system, their legal system, which doesn't in any way serve you whatsoever. And I was just thinking about this as you were talking. What if we were to create, like, you know how they have citizen-initiated referenda? What if you had citizen-initiated courtrooms where there is an elected judicial representative and they make judgments based on such and such and blah, 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 and dispense justice that way and have people voluntarily comply with it or something? I don't know. It's just,
well,
I'm just throwing
you know, we've got a movement over here, and I think there are about 1 million people that are subscribing to information on self-representation and what you do when you go into the courts. And although I haven't gotten into this, a good person, I don't know whether you've ever interviewed him, is Wayne McHugh. He's been into court and won on numerous occasions on common law issues. And what we're finding is, because the courts are also corporations, that it may just well be that even our judges aren't legally appointed judges. They haven't sworn an oath and they don't have a bond. And if people can do their research and find out how to approach that when they first go into court, what we're seeing is more and more that we're not getting trial by jury, which is a constitutional right, and not just for serious crime, that less and less juries are being used, and we can insist on that. And we can, you know, this is about people being courageous now, understanding what they're doing, getting in contact with the right networks of people that have tried this and have proven it to be effective, and not just going with the flow anymore. I don't believe that many of the judges actually understand that they are acting what could be illegally. And there's a great YouTube clip for people to read when all this was discovered in Australia. It's called What the FUQ? Frequently Unanswered Questions About the Australian Government. And it started off with a guy trying to import a car from America to Western Australia.
Scott Bartle, eh?
Yes.
I had him on the show. And great guy.
Yes, he is. And there are a lot of splinter groups that have been going for a lot longer than Scott Bartle on this issue. There's been the straw man thing, you know, all of that sort of stuff. But, you know, they're only small pieces to the bigger puzzle. And we really need to sit down now and get our head around how the system, using the system against the system, is going to work for us. And then, of course, we've got to have the confidence and the courage to actually move on that. And I believe there are people in New Zealand that are also getting involved in this sort of thing as well. And what I'd like to see, you talk about setting up another system. What I'd like to see is these people who have gone into court and have used the system against itself and have won to set up education groups within the community for people that are going through all sorts of challenges to educate them on the how, what, when, where, why, who that this works.
We have an agency.
That's when we create our own system.
We have an agency in New Zealand called the Citizens Advice Bureau. So if at any point you have dealings with the government or legal staff or anything like that, they have a volunteer network who you can go into their offices and see, and they'll give you certain advice, show you where to go and things like that. And I reckon that that should actually be the model of how these countries, our countries really, are going to develop going forward. Because what I've found is interesting, it's very Orwellian because everything is the opposite of what its stated intention is. So if
That's
its
right.
intention is, say, the if the carbon tax legislation, for example, its intention is to help the environment, well, actually what it's going to do is just destroy human civilization. If the health system is there to keep people healthy, well, obviously it's there to make them sick and make them need the health system even more.
Yes.
If the politician's job description is to solve the country's problems, then obviously their job is really to make more problems for the country
Create
so that they
them.
Continue to
yes.
be gainfully employed, as it were. And I think that, again, voluntarism and charity is being wiped out by government wholesale because it's really the thing that that binds people together is doing something for another person, not because you're compelled or forced to do it, but because you choose to out of your own goodwill for your common man.
Yep, I agree with you. I agree that governments are dismantling over here the non-government sector at lightning speed, that all of those organisations that were set up by people in the community because they were concerned for their fellow men have gradually been infiltrated and taken over by government. And if they didn't agree to that, then if they didn't play the game, then they were closed down, shut down. We've seen an entire centralisation of power, and it's all controlled by government. And we do need to start those community groups now that are there to aid and assist for no reward other than the fact that this is what we do as a community. We pull together. And we can beat the system. We can beat the system. And people need to have confidence that there are people that have done that and done it well and that they have knowledge to pass on. And the other side of it is people need to be prepared to listen to that advice.
Yeah. I mean, look at it this way. If you're going to be following an advice from somebody, who should you follow the advice from? The people who are actually being successful at what they do or the people who mess up and turn to crap everything that they touch, like the government? I think it's pretty straightforward. We'll be right back.
I got some so-called friends. Smile right to my face.
Oh, yeah.
All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Whose side are you on? Welcome back.
JFK.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The show that knows 100%. What side you should be on. It's called the right side of history. Speaking of history, a helpful quote from Sun Tzu in The Art of War. When an enemy offers distraction or is elusive, pretend to take his lead to discover his intentions. then strike from knowledge of the ground he is preparing for you. In that way, use his strength to prepare the ground for him. My very special guest is Anne Bressington, who is abreast, as it were, considering your name's Anne Bressington, of the scumbaggery within the Australian government, particularly to do with Agenda 21 protocol. And, of course, if you were listening to this broadcast and you're not in Australia, if you're, say, perhaps in New Zealand or America or the Uber Kingdom, the UK, you may recognise every single thing that we're talking about here. You know, why? Because Agenda 21 is not just for Australia or New Zealand or America or the Uber Kingdom or Canada or Laos or Cambodia or anything like that. It's for all of us. All of us. And the best way to take down an overarching system is to take individual stands. It's what I've called the tactic of the cactus. A cactus protects itself by covering itself in every direction with individual spines so that it forms a protective blanket so that any time, any scumbag, anywhere tries to attack this little cactus, they get a little prick to remind them. And that's what we all need to be, not to put too fine a point on it, is a bunch of little pricks working together against the scumbaggery.
I love your analogy.
I put the anal analogy. All right, anyway, sorry about that. Right, so where would you like to take it from here? We only have around less than 10 minutes left in the broadcast, and if you have websites, information, or donation drives, or anything that you'd like to use this listenership for, and of course corresponding archives, I encourage you to do so. The show's kind of like a bathtub; doesn't work very well without a plug or two.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd just like to make the point that people who have lost faith in their politicians, I'd just like to tell you about a little bit about my journey. Since that speech went up on YouTube about Agenda 21. And it's not easy for politicians to stick their head up about these kinds of things since that particular video went on YouTube. I've had my Facebook account hacked, and I've had articles put out in my name that I haven't written. I've basically lost control of my Facebook page and had to deactivate the account, which was a shame because I was getting the message out there on that particular page. I've had almost 3 weeks of pounding media, calling me a wingnut, a conspiracy theorist, you know, the whole defame and destroy your character and your standing. And I've basically had to stand with that on my own because, as you can imagine, the major parties love this sort of thing when it happens to an independent. So if you have a politician that is prepared to stand up for you, then, by God, as a community, you need to get behind that person and you need to give them all the support by writing to other members of parliament and letting them know that you support what that politician is saying, that you know that politician is speaking the truth and that you don't stand for this anymore, because it's tough. It is very tough. People lose sight that members of parliament are also mothers and fathers, aunties, uncles, grandparents, that they have families that are affected by all of the bad media that is put out there. So, number one, it's not easy for politicians to break ranks and speak out about it. You notice that a lot of people, once they're out of Parliament, come clean. And that's because they no longer have to worry about having their name and their reputation destroyed, along with their family members being affected by that as well. So that's the first thing. Don't lump all politicians into the one basket. You will find that there are some in there that are in there for the right reasons, and they either stay on that track of truth or they cave. under the pressure, and there is a lot of pressure applied internally to people to toe the line. So the second thing is, I guess, to start to work together as a community, as you said, become a bunch of little pricks fighting the skullduggery. Come together as a community and get yourselves organised and go to people who have had successes and listen to what they have to say. What I find with people at the moment is because everybody is so confused, everybody is so fearful that they come up with a wacky plan and think that that is going to get them out of the situation that they're in.
Oh yeah, I've seen many.
Yes, and the other side of that is that when they get somebody that is prepared to give them advice, they want to argue with them, you know, because they need to be right. They need to be the one that's got the smoking gun that's going to crack the system. So we have to get a plan, and that plan must come from people who have done it and done it well and succeeded. So whatever wacky plans you may have, put it on hold until you hear what these people have to say and get the information that you need. Number three is there is a lot of homework to be done on this. There is the need for us as individuals to be familiar with our constitution and our constitutional rights. And when a law is being passed that you don't agree with, that you know is stepping over the line, then as a community, you need to come forward and you need to lobby government by email, by letter, in person. It's time-consuming, I know, but in the long term, you're going to get the gains that you're looking for, because silence is consent, ladies and gentlemen. Silence is consent. And if they always warn us about what they're going to do. About 4 months ago, we had Bob Hawke, former Prime Minister, come out and say that we should do away with state government and have local government recognised in the Constitution. Well, you know, wait for the outcry. No, there was none. So now we have this Senate committee that's being formed to recognise local government in the Constitution to get a way around having a referendum. So they always give you, even if it's only a small little article in the paper or a 5-second bite in the news, they always warn you about what they're intending to do. And we just sit back and pass it off and go, oh, that'll never happen. Well, it does. And we have to be ever alert of the little messages that they're sending us of what their plan is. And then, of course, as I said, we need that plan to actually carry it out and to resist. You know, public disobedience is a necessity, but it has to be, as you said, lawful and peaceful, and using that system against them.
And also, I want to advise people, don't be naive. Just because somebody's coming up with a crazy plan doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. Here's the reason I know that. Because how much crazy stuff has already happened? You have a look at history and you have a look at the present, and it'll probably tell you what your future will hold. And in my experience, through my studies, there are nutcases out there and psychopaths, and they're very, very adept at getting themselves into positions of power, of manipulating other people, and of implementing things that are completely insane. And people pass it off just saying, that's so crazy, it'll never happen. And sure enough, it does. Because they assume that the people passing this crazy legislation aren't crazy themselves. It's not the case, in some cases.
Well, I have to agree. I mean, if you look at the environmental movement and where it started to where it is now, who would have believed 15 years ago, that we would be at the point where a rock has the same, you know, as far as the United Nations are concerned, has the same status as a human being. Who would have thought that we have a person like Ted Turner, who is a member of the Club of Rome, saying that we need to reduce the population by 95% because the planet needs to survive. Who would have thought that Mikhail Gorbachev, who was also a member of the Club of Rome, would be one of the people responsible for drafting Agenda 21 and having that rolled out right throughout all over the globe? You know, we've lost sight of who these people are and how much power they have and what their agenda is. And their agenda is not us. It's not looking after us. So we've got to start looking after ourselves. And to think that, you know, we do have psychopaths running the world. No doubt about it, that they have a whole other agenda to what we would believe would be for the continuation of humankind. And they've got to be stopped.
Indeed. Anne Bressington, ladies and gentlemen, man, I've really enjoyed this conversation, and you're a top lady, top Aussie, Sheila. Thank you very much for your time. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Remember to get to the archives there off the website, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question.